This is comedian Daryl Lennox making his debut on Mr. Media. Fantastic man, a medium pleasing voice to the ear, but still a nice guy. And here's a tip. You can try to get Mr. Media to do a sex tape and just sell the audio, and it might work. It probably won't. Thanks for watching, Mr. Media.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Jacques Broreau, editor of Sexy Time, the post-porn rise of the pornosaur. Stick around. This show is likely to sensationalize porn, and you know you can't wait. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. The show is brought to you today by Amazon.com, the world's greatest store for everything from books and movies to computers, TVs, and even my favorite soft drink, Pepsi Wild Cherry. Thinking about buying something online from Amazon or just want to do a little window shopping? You can save yourself a lot of money and help support Mr. Media, that's me, by clicking on one of the Amazon ads at MrMedia.com and start your shopping with us. Get yourself the new iPad or Kindle Fire. Feeling a little racy today? Amazon's got what you need to feel exciting and new, as they used to sing on The Love Boat. Remember, start your next shopping trip from the comfort of your own home, car, hotel, or office with Amazon.com at MrMedia.com. That's right, MrMedia.com. And folks, thanks for your support. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of 1970s porn starlets who wish they were as interesting as their movie posters in the Nuna Media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. I had a lot of really great jobs as both a high school and college student in my youth, from hauling carpets in a retail store to working in a science fiction bookstore across from Princeton University and being a substitute rural mailman. But my favorite was working as a ticket taker, usher, and concessionaire at the Royal Park Cinemas 4 in Gainesville, Florida. Frankly, a lot of my memories of that store revolve around sex. There was the time our manager, Mr. Simons, defied local police warnings and ran the classic full-length porno, Debbie Does Dallas. You know, the one where the panic guy says, "Don't choke, baby, don't die!" And then the police closed us down. It was pretty cool. Yeah, that one. It was the Royal Park where I first met the girls who I ever had sex with, and where it seemed like all we ever did around the theater was talk about sex. I also got one of my first major magazine assignments, thanks to the theater, when adult film director Russ Myers came to the Royal Park to promote his new film, which was something ultra vixens. All you had to know was they were all about vixens, super vixens, ultra vixens, beneath the valley of the ultra vixens, and that he once worked with the late Roger Ebert. My future best man, Alan Solomon, and I had a two-hour lunch with the legendary director and had returned later to the luncheonette to collect our jaws. The Royal Park was also where, late one night, after the weekly midnight screening of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, my coworkers and I discovered a treasure trove of neatly folded 1970s porno movie posters behind a silver screen. And I cannot tell a lie, by now someone has probably discovered that the one sheets for Flesh Gordon, Sex World, and others are no longer in their hiding spot. Sorry, fellas. Now, fast forward many years, and I saw a tease for Sexy Time, the post-porn rise of the pornosaur, and it was a book after my own nostalgic heart, even if I don't know exactly what a pornosaur is, or even if I'm saying it correctly. So joining me to explain it all is Jacques Broreau, editor of Sexy Time. Jacques, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hello, Mr. Media.
Hello, Jacques. How are you?
Good.
So I've got a lot of questions for you, but let's start with the one of the moment. What exactly is a pornosaur, and how exactly should one say it? Somehow, the way I say it, it sounds like dinosaur. It doesn't sound quite right.
Yeah. I mean, dinosaur is a fine point of reference. It's a lot like a dinosaur. in that it's very imaginary. And what I mean by that is that, okay, Porn of Sewer just is basically suggesting that there might be different ways of being fascinated by porn than are commonly practiced at this moment. And the book is a conjuration, if you will, of such a possible state of mind.
Very artistically dealt.
Well, I mean, sure. And in that sense, you know, you might as well say, well, also very vague and abstract, and you still didn't really answer the question. I mean, it was irresistible, just the pun on connoisseur.
Right.
The alliteration of post-porn, pornosaur. I mean, I couldn't resist, but it also resonated with me as an idea that I wondered if it could come true. And I think its time has come. No pun intended. but if you think of time coming, that's a pretty interesting notion. And of course we have, you know, the related idea, which a lot of value gets placed upon, of coming together. So if something is coming, if a time is coming, and that somehow relates to, let's say, some connection to your own personal comings, then maybe you're at that point where your evolution as a consumer and also as a lover and as a just a creature in this universe is going somewhere. And those are the kind of books that I try to make, that take the stuff of pop culture and commercial products and graphic design worlds and try to squeeze some extra meaning out of them.
I honestly have no idea what you just said, but it was very entertaining the way you said it.
Okay. Well, all right.
I was just thinking that, you know, when I was in college, which would have been about 78 to 82, that a speaker who said what you said would have gotten an immense standing ovation for that. And I wonder if you could talk about these things even on campuses today, if they're just too conservative to allow such things.
Well, you know, we're going off of the cuff and and the wing right now, which is the way to do it, I think, is the sort of essence of peer to peer. Were it more formal, I would just want to have a little more ammunition in terms of visual backup and some reference points and, you know, quote some other people that have gotten away with not really being that clear about what they're saying, but somehow it makes sense. And right. And that is, and I'll be frank, is I have a lot of faith in the group mind at a subconscious level, and I think by that I mean that I think real information that can be retained has to be sort of musical, okay? Mm-hmm. There's this idea that whales, for example, preserve within their communication amongst each other all the data in the universe is somehow embedded in this song that they share as a species, that they then, it's kind of like a storage device, if you will. So in that sense, pornography is a type of a storage device for our species, and contains an unbelievable amount of information, not just the obvious stuff. And what we, and by pornosourship, it's in this case, it's fixating on the design elements contained in the world of signage relating to pornography, namely all these posters. Mm. And what we were getting off on with this was how interesting these posters are and how it doesn't mean that you have to even see any of these movies.
Right.
Okay. And that was unique because I've been a poster freak for forever. I mean, a lot of your stories about finding the stash in the theaters, I can believe me, I got my own like those. but never has there been the thing about the porn posters is that the separation, the schism, the chasm between the movie product and the poster product is the widest, sort of biggest pussy chasm you could ever imagine. If we're gonna sort of stick to our kind of obvious metaphors here, I mean, this is a big pussy of a chasm. Okay, this is all right, and that is where the opportunity comes in, I think, to start to look at the posters from a more symbolic point of view, where you're not just thinking about, oh, I got to see this movie, but you're thinking about what does this cave painting mean, and how this is a and that's where you can get into a state of mind where you're looking, I would define, okay, here's how I define balance. Balance to me is fundamentally a state of mind where the importance of the past is equal to the importance of the future. And if you have that condition, I think that you're quite receptive to symbolism. And so that is why, for example, when we were making this book, we had a big decision that truly affected the production experience as well as the budget, which was, do we just go old school and vintage and just reprint this incredible collection of vintage posters and leave them sort of as we found them, basically, with the creases and all the tears and the holes and all the, just in other words, as the artifacts that they truly are? Or do we remaster them and rebuild them and go Steve Austin on them and turn them into these pristine objects that are almost from the future because they're so pristine and how they've been recreated? And then, therefore, sort of pull them away from their anchor in the reality of their past. So we opted for the more futuristic approach, and the main reason for that was that we wanted to release all their future symbolic powers. Basically treating the posters as if they were the new Avengers or a whole bunch of superheroes. Oh. And as we know, there's a lot of crossover between superhero mythology and porn mythology.
All right. I thought you were mid sentence there. I didn't want to interrupt. I'm still appreciating the fact that you slipped in a $6 million man reference before.
Oh yeah.
In the midst of that.
Oh, yeah.
That was great. Because as you said, we can rebuild them, and I thought, Steve Austin.
Yeah.
and then you made the reference. It was great. We're coming from the same place here, I think, somehow. Well,
absolutely.
So tell me, how do you make a decision to collect this type of movie poster? I mean, there's a lot of movie poster books out there. There's a lot of incredible movie posters in the world. These are not necessarily you're right. I mean, I've seen some of these movies over the years, both being at the theater and then just out of curiosity. And you're right. Once you've seen the poster, there's really not that much that you need to see in terms of the movie in a lot of these cases. What attracted you to the posters in terms of a book collection as opposed to just, well, knowing they're on your shelf and they're kind of funny and, you might take them out at a party and show them around. But, why a book?
Well, I mean, out of deep respect for my collaborator, Peter Van Horn, on this project, he was the collector. Mm. And what happened was that I had done a number of books prior – particularly one called Trash, which in a lot of ways is, it could be considered a book that really reanimated the Grindhouse movement. I mean, because this Trash came out in 2002 and can definitely be pegged as a particular moment of reanimation. And so a lot of people knew this book, including Peter. So I met him after I moved to Portland, and he let it be known that he had been sort of rather pathologically been collecting these porn posters for a number of years. And it's not something that I knew a lot about. So when he showed me his collection, I was, again, you know, I was blown away. It felt like, you know, the final frontier of at least American posters, for me at least, because I knew pretty much, I was familiar with almost every other realm, and here was one that I was not so familiar with. Mm. A lot of this has to do with these posters were not produced at the same, you know, numbers. So you're dealing in, you know, de facto with sort of limited editions that weren't advertising themselves as limited editions. It was just naturally limited. And the other thing that really got me was just how, again, how independent they were from their titular products. Okay, I'm trying to throw in as many, you know, this is kind of, you know,
it's a very titillating conversation, there's no doubt.
So that said, what I got from it was that the designers had a lot of freedom, and they used it. Mm. And then this mixed with the wonderful situation that this is coming from a time when the crime, the previously designated crime of pornography is now publicly legit. So considering that these posters had to be designed for quote unquote safe consumption on the streets, you know, for the general public of all ages, when you understand that and you look at them, you really begin to get turned on by how much these guys and gals were getting away with and what they were really doing. And so then I'm just, you know, immediately impressed, and I had to just do something about it and say, we need to share this with, you know, other people. And, you know, we need to take it back to the market.
So the book is published by Fantagraphics, which is largely known for comics and graphic novels and the big Charles Schulz Peanuts complete version of that. Is the connection that there is an art here at work in these posters? Or is it just that it's, you know, it's just fun and a little sexy and a little, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of I guess a lot of the spirit of Fantagraphics books has, you know, for almost 40 years, this is basically the label, you know, that had the sensitivity and the vision to really treat comic art as art. Mm-hmm. and to, you know, give it which is a deep thing for me, because I mean, I can, you know, I originally grew up as a little kid in Paris, so I was reading Tintin when I was, you know, 2 years old, and then when we moved back to Chicago, and I was, you know, I was a true child of the 70s, and getting going, and, you know, this is a time, you know, when you go to the comic book store and it would be connected to an old bookstore or toy store, and it was like being in the library it was like the cool library, because you had all these books and you had magazines, but then you had the comics, and they were the feeling towards them that these were comic books. I mean, this is a time where you didn't need which I consider a pretty kind of I don't know, just sort of not such a great term, i.e. the graphic novel. I mean, because the thing is, if you got the book part of a comic book, you don't need the graphic novel because you've got a comic book. So this is really the ideology of Fantagraphics. So it was really a nice segue to sort of then try to share that type of feeling, you know, to want to glorify things and to then start to place that into different realms that were sort of comic booky. So this, which relates to the first book that I did with them, which was Portable Grindhouse, which was all about VHS mm-hmm. box art. So pretty much what I've done in the years that I've been with them is start to just try to extend their intrinsic fascination with comic art into what I like to do, which is basically create comic books for adults.
Jacques, did you learn anything about the creation of these posters and putting the book together? For example, did you find if there were any, was there a Michelangelo of the 70s porn poster, or were there tricks or things that were common to these posters in terms of language they used or they didn't use, or I don't know.
Well, there's definitely some superstar artists here, but to be just immediately, you know, awkwardly up front, the artist kind of, you know, fetishization, that's really Peter's, you know, that's his realm.
Okay.
I was brought in more as, okay, you're the curator and, you know, like sort of something in between an expert and a village idiot, which I like to think of as a curator.
Mm-hmm.
So try to pull out the pattern recognitions and then try to speak of it as a genre relating to a medium, relating to a culture. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I guess I've been stuck with that kind of, you know, semantic kind of gig for quite some time.
For example,
but I do have my favorites too, you know.
All right. Well, I'll ask you about that in a second. I'm just curious though. the romance books. Fabio made a great living for many years, being on the cover of hundreds, maybe thousands, for all I know, of women's romance novels. In comics, in the '60s, '70s, Jack Kirby would do dozens of covers. It gave them. There was a continuity. They had a certain look. Even now, there are certain artists at Marvel or DC or wherever that just do covers because they do very dynamic things. So I wondered if you know, like, would you see a certain style repeat? Did you see any women who repeated from movie poster to movie poster, even though maybe they weren't in the movie?
Well, you know, see, now you're triggering an interesting tangent, because the first thing that's going through my mind right now is that I'm thinking to myself that all that fantasy art, particularly a series of books that came out, that my friends and I, they were sort of like the first expensive books that we bought. Mm-hmm. And they were a series of very fancy, glossy color plates, all Frank Frazetta's books. And thinking back on them now, I would argue that de facto these were porn posters. Okay.
Oh, without question. I remember when I bought the fantastic art of Frank Frazetta and brought it home, and my dad saw it and was like, "What is that?" And he was, you know, he doesn't care about the sword and sorcery and the, you know, he was just like, "Wow, look how tiny those little metal bikinis are, the chain metal."
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
No, of course it was.
So indeed, indeed.
And there too, you had his art being used across a series of books. It wasn't necessarily it wasn't necessarily painted, for example, for specific books by that point. They were just grabbing it, going, it's continuity. It's a, it says we're, you know, we were a certain style of a book. You know, maybe these characters are in there, maybe they're not. You know, of course, there was a lot of, he did a lot of paintings for the Conan books, of course, but there are other stuff, and it just, it's like I was saying, same thing with the Kirby or even Fabio. It's just there's a continuity there of style or image or whatever it might be.
Yes. Now what's a little different about with a lot of the material that we selected for Sexy Time is that you can't. I mean, Frazetta just, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of like, okay, he's the ultimate in body representation, and certainly, he did pretty good hair, but I wouldn't accuse him of really like giving great face. Okay, And I think that was actually part of a kind of an intentional subordination of priorities that really emphasized the body language, which worked great. But what struck me as I was going through the material with Sexy Time was that there is a just huge and incredible and sexy, of course, but more than sexy, like just real, just Freudian collection of face expressions in this book. Okay, and when you not to mention. This book, if I was opening a salon or was trying to, you know, get into the hairstyle business in any way, shape, or form, okay, here's your Quran, okay? Here's your secular Quran for, like, what great hair, you know, is, okay? But more than that, there's a true, beautiful, and disturbing variety, and I talk about this in the introduction, of female... facial attitudes and messaging going on, and I think that is kind of where a lot of the designers were really tapping into how far can we take this? How, you know, what can we, again, what can, not just what labia can be penetrated, but what veils can be penetrated? Okay, what, you know, what epidermal veils relating to the psyche of what goes on inside the female creature in relation to predatory sexual behavior, what can be revealed? Mm-hmm. So to me, at that level, I would say that, Sexy Time as an artifact is as important and revealing as any study that's ever been made about sexual proclivities and behavior and the meaning behind the desire, you know, the agenda.
Well, so
the agenda. Yeah. Okay.
I was going to say, so you, you did the VHS collection of covers.
Mm.
You've done now this 70s kind of porn, kind of one. They're kind of like one sheets, most of them. I think just in general reference, we'd call them that. The current mode is the DVDs. All the movies are in DVDs. You don't usually see these films in theaters anymore. Is the art of pornos? Is it lost in the DVD market? I know a lot of bands complain that, you know, you just can't make a very attractive CD cover for music like you could a big album cover. It just doesn't lend itself anymore. Is there any art? I guess what I'm asking is there art to pornographic DVDs, or has that day come and gone?
Well, I mean, definitely there's incredible, you know, porno VHS big box, you know, connection. I mean, just because, I mean, I've seen, you know, there's plenty, but just speaking for myself, it's hard to get excited about a DVD cover.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess, you know, I don't even, and to wondering about that, why is that? Well, I don't know. That's, you know, maybe that's a whole other type of, depressing discussion, you know. But no, I will not be doing any DVD books.
Yeah. All right. Well, so what? So let's wrap up with this. What is next? What do you do after this? What do you have coming up?
The well, you know, we're talking about a portable grindhouse sequel, possibly even a Sexy Time sequel. I mean, we definitely, have the material, but there's also a project related to 60s monster culture, which I'm pretty excited about because that's, you know, that's the golden and the silver and, you know, and the psychedelic era of just when monsters, you know, could appear anywhere. They were everywhere and anywhere and everywhere in our culture.
Godzilla!
Yeah, sure. Exactly. And also, by the way, speaking of, the one thing I really am glad that I learned when I was very briefly married was that it was the ex-wife many years ago who was the first one to plant the thought in me that Godzilla is a chick. And when you know, look at those childbearing thighs, the sort of menstrual freakouts. As well as a certain kind of protectiveness, right, towards the earth itself and all, you know.
But now I've got to go to my wife of 25 years and say, why haven't you ever provided me with any insight like that guy got? And he was only married a short time. Come on, you're behind.
That's true, but I'm sure she's done many things. Right? But since you're asking, I'll tell you that the next big thing that I'm really it's not quite a new thing, but it's something that has really evolved a lot. The one we're in production now is a book called Super Trash, and it's not exactly a sequel to Trash. It has a lot to do with an art show that I curated for the Andy Warhol Museum back in 2009, which has then since traveled to other museums. It was recently at the Anchorage Museum in Alaska, and it is basically the premise of Super Trash is that, back to movie posters, is that it's a portrait of the 20th century told through movie posters. So just this idea that our movie signage is just very valuable and needs to be seen in a way outside of just, you know, your favorite actor or your favorite movie or this genre or that genre, but as something that really can sort of tell us, you know, can just tell us a lot in very subconscious direct terms. And it's fun because I really get off on crazy juxtapositions. To me, it's that whole idea of surrealism, which is that, you know, if you place things in the right, if you create a relationship of connection and juxtapositions, that suddenly magic happens, you know, and that the real whole comes out of the parts and takes you to the next level of cultural, you know, acuity that will allow you to see how your world and your fellow creatures are evolving. And I really believe that. And I guess that's kind of why I have a special love for movies and for their posters.
All right.
You know, they're, yeah.
Well, very cool. Well, folks, listen, you can find Sexy Time, the post-porn rise of the pornosaur, edited by my guest, Jacques Broreau, in great bookstores everywhere, or order it right now for a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching the video, if you look just below the video right here on the page, you'll see the image of the cover. Click on it right now. It'll get you a great price. You can have it. You can have it tomorrow, probably, from Amazon. So do that. Jacques, is there a website for the book? Twitter, Facebook, any of that stuff?
Just old Fanagraphics, and just to let you know that I definitely I like to kind of put my money where my mouth is, and vice versa. And but we, if you haven't had a chance to look at it yet, we made a really funny video selling the book, where we I got a model, and we basically had her interact with the book, and then we gave the book a voice so that the book is literally talking to her, and it's funny.
Where is
and,
the video? On Fantagraphics.com?
If you go to the Sexy Time page and in their site, there's a link to it. But yeah, it's pretty hot, and I'm sorry to say, even though she understood exactly what we were going, you know, it's by no means, you know, explicit, but it's explicit in the way that the posters are in terms of the innuendo and the vibe. But she was, I guess, pretty embarrassed by the result. I'm happy. I guess at this point, I'm happy to say, at first I was like, you know, it's that whole thing of like, you want, you know, this is where, again, we're back to the puns, you know, we're like, you know, you want where you want someone to like it, right?
Yes. And by the way, I did notice that earlier you slipped in tapping at an interesting point. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Listen, Jacques.
I mean, the bottom line is that we all have to deal with the curse of porn, you know, and one way or another, and curse it is. And I just wanted to kind of do it in a way that at least just started a new line of inquiry.
All right.
And I think we did that.
Yeah. It's a fun book.
And I appreciate. Yeah, and I'm glad. And I got to tell you, when you're talking about Florida and that whole, when I think of Florida, I think of just a place that, you know, is kind of, you know, like it's kind of like the relationship to Florida and porn is, that could be a whole book right there, you know, just as an environment, you know. As an environment that like kind of really breeds that world. Let's face it.
Oh, I have no doubt.
Yeah.
I have no doubt.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I will add a tease here at the end that the Russ Meyer interview that I pointed, I referenced at the beginning, will shortly be going up as an audio interview. So you can look forward
that's
to that.
That's cool. That's cool.
Right now, though, I want to say, Jacques, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today. And we'll look forward to the next book.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Bob.
My pleasure. You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest 2-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Mark Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, the TechCrunch headlines, and the Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening. Today's episode of Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting when you go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout.